Thank you, Michael. I apologize. I said that they really wanted a picture of the two of us together because I think the only one that they have is at Mike's wedding when the two of us were kissing. It's a long story. I don't want to go there. All right. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mike had said to me repeatedly and indeed emphatically not to address this subject. So I think it's only fair that I do so right at the beginning. I understand why he wanted me not to go here. He didn't want it to be maudlin. He didn't want this all to be about Kathy Bryan. But I'm sorry. I cannot come to a fuel ethanol workshop, an event that is synonymous with Kathy, an event that was created because of her vision and that of Bob Sudduff's some 26 years ago, and not mention her name, not mourn her passing, and not discuss a little bit about what she has meant to this industry. So I apologize, Michael. I am going to talk a little bit about her, just a little. Many of you knew Kathy very, very well. You knew her indomitable spirit. You knew how much she worked for this industry and for the company BBI. You knew how she cared about rural America. You knew how much she wanted ethanol to become what it has indeed now become. And it was her vision and her passion that inspired so many of us to continue the struggle to move this industry forward for many, many years. But when I think about Kathy, and I think about her often, the thing that I think about the most is just her friendship. She knew everybody, and she cared about everybody. And this is an industry that sometimes there'll be feuds and petty disputes, and Kathy would be friends with both sides. And, you know, it made it a little bit more difficult to carry on that grudge or that feud when you both share this common bond of a deep and abiding respect and love for Kathy Bryan. We need her today, probably more than ever. And I feel her spirit with us today as we gather here for this fuel ethanol workshop, her signature event. And I don't want us to just ignore or dismiss the contribution that she made. So thank you for indulging me. I apologize, Michael, yet again. I didn't listen to you. But I am most pleased to be here at this event today. And I'm honored to be able to share my thoughts and to set the tone for this event. As Michael noted, we gather here today as an environmental catastrophe continues to unfold in the Gulf of Mexico, the economic and environmental cost of which is simply unimaginable. As a consequence, the choice between the dangers of our addiction to oil and the promise of American renewable fuels is as clear today as the contrast between the blackened estuaries of the Gulf Coast and the sparkling green fields of rural America. Now, no one in this room is naive enough to believe that America is going to stop using oil today, tomorrow, or any time in the near future. But that should not deter us from aggressively proceeding with efforts to develop and deploy the wide range of ethanol technologies you in this room are developing. The lesson of the tragedy in the Gulf need not be that America must stop drilling. Rather, it must be that we need not drill at all if we empower the people in this room to do their jobs. President Obama, in a speech in Pittsburgh a week or so ago, said, quote, "If we refuse to take into account the full cost of our fossil fuel addiction, if we don't factor in the environmental costs and the national security costs and the true economic costs, we will have missed our best chance to seize a clean energy future." President Obama is correct. More than ever before, now is the time to embrace the entrepreneurial spirit and ingenuity of America's heartland and break our addiction to oil. Now must be the time for us to seize control of our energy future. That future begins with the expertise and the creativity of the people in this room. Over the past 30 years, our industry has achieved unprecedented growth and success. Domestic ethanol production is truly, truly an American success story. Just consider how far we've come. When the FEW first began in 1985, American ethanol production hit 610 million gallons. As we gather here today, our industry is producing at a rate exceeding 12.5 billion gallons annually. We have gone from a kitschy Midwestern phenomenon to a national fuel comprising 10% of the nation's gasoline supply while displacing some 360 million barrels of imported oil a year. Ethanol production is bringing unequaled economic opportunity and growth to hundreds of rural communities all across the country. Last year alone, ethanol production helped nearly 400,000 people keep their jobs or find new ones, all while unemployment nationally climbed toward 10%. It increased federal, state, and local coffers by increasing tax revenue that is used to build schools, to repair roads, to hire first responders. Adding to that, American ethanol producers are now a major player on the world market. Exports of U.S. ethanol are on pace to shatter all previous records, providing a much-needed outlet for current production. Given all the domestic benefits offered by ethanol production, the emerging export market for U.S. ethanol raises a couple of important questions. As a nation, are we committed to replacing our reliance on fossil fuels with domestic renewable alternatives or not? Or should we see ethanol exports as a good sign, enhancing our balance of trade? As Dave Nelson, an Iowa ethanol producer and a proud RFA member, recently wrote in the Des Moines Register, the answer to both is yes. But the second question should only be relevant when we have fully realized all of the benefits of domestic ethanol use. Now, having spent more than 23 years with the Renewable Fuels Association, I am proud of the success this industry has achieved and the role that the RFA has been able to play. But lobbyists, any lobbyist, are only as good as the technical underpinnings of the arguments they make. No political battle is ever won solely on rhetorical flair. That's why I've always benefited from this event. You are the people I turn to for the information I need to advocate on your behalf in Washington. You possess the technical expertise and experience that allows this industry to be successful, both on Capitol Hill and in the marketplace. Together, we have passed multiple extensions of key tax incentives. Together, we established ethanol as a safe alternative to MTBE and oxygenate markets. Together, we established the first ever renewable fuel standard, requiring oil companies to use renewable fuels, only to expand it fivefold just 2 years later. Together, we created incentives and programs to accelerate the commercialization of cellulose and other advanced biofuels the people in this room are developing. The challenges we face today, whether it is determining the carbon footprint of the industry, responding to critics opposing higher level ethanol blends, or defending tax incentives, require a greater degree of technical foundation than at any time before. So together, we have a lot more work to do. Everyone here today is well aware of the industry's push to increase ethanol blending allowances to 15% of each gallon of gasoline. We're all eagerly awaiting EPA's decision, which I believe will come sometime later this summer. I believe that decision will be a positive one once EPA is able to review the data from DOE on catalytic converters. And I'm confident the results of that testing will show the efficacy of using E15. But even when EPA approves higher level blends, our work is really just beginning. Before a drop of E15 can be sold, some fuel regulations will need to be adjusted at both the state and federal level. For example, the RFA recently brought to EPA's attention the need to extend the federal 1-pound RVP allowance from 10% to 15% ethanol. While that's not something that lends itself easily to an ad campaign, it is indeed the type of technical issue that must be resolved before any E15 can be sold in the marketplace. But there are other issues. We'll need to secure waivers and certifications from local fire marshals to allow higher blends to be sold in legacy equipment. The RFA is leading an effort to do just that with Growth Energy, the American Coalition for Ethanol, and the National Corn Growers Association. We need to complete fuel emission speciation and health effects analysis of E15. RFA, Growth Energy, and several corn growers' state organizations have initiated a test program at SWRI to do just that. There are a range of issues that we'll need to work through at ASTM, creating a mid-level blend specification, establishing octane standards, and assuring that E15 complies with all the necessary fuel standards. The RFA's Director of Technical Services, Christy Moore, is chairing the mid-level blend committee at ASTM and working with all ethanol producers to make that happen. Adding to the complexity of the E15 issue, EPA appears to be heading down a path that would limit the use of E15 to only those vehicles 2001 and newer. Now, not only would this exclude an enormous amount of the nation's gasoline market, I know my driveway is filled with some vehicles older than that. It creates unnecessary and unjustified confusion for refiners and retailers and drivers alike. EPA has not one scintilla of data to justify excluding 50% of the existing motor vehicle fleet from E15. Few retailers will be willing to offer 15% ethanol blends if it is required to add infrastructure or it creates confusion at the pump for which they might be liable. And a label, any label that starts with the word warning and ends with the word ethanol, is only going to create additional confusion for consumers. We need to get EPA to allow the use of higher level blends for all vehicles. While of critical importance to our industry, the E15 waiver is not the only challenge we face. At the end of this year, the blender's credit of 45 cents per gallon that gasoline refiners and marketers get for each gallon of ethanol they blend into gasoline is set to expire. The RFA has worked with the National Corn Growers, Growth Energy, the American Coalition for Ethanol, and leaders in Congress to get bipartisan legislation introduced in both the House and the Senate that would extend the credit as well as other important ethanol tax incentives through the year 2015. Extending these tax incentives comes at a critical juncture in the evolution of our industry. Next generation technologies that expand the basket of feedstocks from which we will make ethanol are on the cusp of commercialization. Existing ethanol biorefineries are developing breakthroughs in the production process, the production of co-products, and the production of livestock feed that are improving efficiencies, reducing inputs, and making ethanol even more economically and environmentally sustainable. Additionally, tens of thousands of jobs are at risk. Allowing the ethanol tax incentive to expire would cost the nation 112,000 jobs at a time of near-record unemployment. It would force nearly 2 out of every 5 ethanol plants to close, at least in the short term. If the example of the biodiesel industry has taught us anything, it is that we cannot wait. Now, according to one recent report, the fossil fuel industry is the recipient of some $500 billion in tax incentives and subsidies across the globe. And as we rapidly deplete those finite resources, the search and exploitation of new sources is causing seen and unseen environmental destruction. Whether we're going deeper into the ocean or further into the Canadian or Colombian forest, the production of new oil and fossil fuel resources is simply unsustainable. And yet we subsidize it to the tune of $500 billion. The federal ethanol tax incentive has worked. It is building an industry. It is encouraging investment in new, more sustainable technology. It is building infrastructure today. It is providing value-added benefits to farmers. It's lowering the price of gasoline to consumers all across the country. I will not apologize for it. And as long as petroleum and every other energy resource in the world benefits from government support, we should not accept unilateral disarmament. My friends, this will be an uphill battle. Washington is a dysfunctional town today. One member of Congress recently expressed to me his frustration about the failure of Congress to do its work, even if it's just the bare minimum that's being required. Together with a challenging economic climate and reinvigorated opposition to our industry, extending these tax incentives will not be easy. But as it has always been with any legislative fight we've ever had, this industry will prevail. We will be successful because you will contact your members of Congress, educating them on the importance of ethanol to your communities. We will extend these tax incentives because we have done the background work necessary to make our case. We will win because our arguments are not hyperbolic rhetoric, but based on sound data and rational thought. And we will win because we know the dangers of failure. To be forewarned is to be forearmed. As you are all intimately aware, our challenges do not stop at the Beltway. We continue to face passionate, albeit unsupported, opposition in state governments as well. The state of California, both our largest single domestic market as well as our largest pain in the side, continues to ignore science and unfairly penalize this industry. The challenge in California is well documented. The state's Air Resources Board has contorted science in an attempt to eliminate grain-based ethanol. They have created a no Midwest ethanol need apply in the state of California. It continues to assert, despite new science to the contrary, that American ethanol is responsible for dramatic changes in land use in other nations. Even though the very model the state used now shows it overestimated ethanol carbon intensity from indirect land use by a factor of 2. The Air Resources Board continues to look at the best available science. Now, even though California's regulation is moving forward, we have not abandoned the fight. The RFA continues to tap the expertise of the people in this room to demonstrate CARB's flawed decision. For example, the recent data released from the University of Illinois demonstrated the clear improvement ethanol producers have achieved in energy use, water use, ethanol yields, and innovation. This data, compiled with the cooperation from most of the companies represented here today, paints a picture of innovation ARB and any other ethanol credit ignores at its peril. Now, California is but a practical example of the impractical rhetoric used by those in the environmental community to denigrate and dismiss ethanol at every turn. Most recently, they charged that the use of ethanol in the United States reduces our demand for oil. That's a good thing. But they say that reduction reduces the price of oil. I thought that was a good thing, too. The environmentalist's new flawed argument, though, says because we are reducing the price of oil on the world stage, that's encouraging increased petroleum use in other nations. And ethanol should be penalized for that increased petroleum use elsewhere. I can't make this stuff up. By this thinking, any of the solutions that environmentalists tout as being beneficial should be subject to the same kind of a penalty. Want to increase fuel economy? I'm sorry, that's a carbon penalty. What about the electric car? Carbon penalty. Energy Star appliances? Penalty. Riding your bike? Penalty. It simply defies common sense. Now, they call this the global rebound effect. I'm an Irishman. in a polite community like this, I would call that malarkey. And we must continue to expose this kind of nonsense for the unforgivable distraction that it is. The challenges to this industry, though, are not solely the unrealistic claims of activists seeking to keep ethanol in a box. There are practical, market-oriented challenges that can only be overcome with data-driven solutions and only overcome by the people in this room. As I mentioned earlier, there are regulatory issues that must be addressed in order for E15 to materialize. But E15 alone is not the answer. We must expand the use of mid-level and high-level blends as well. As an industry, we must not force ourselves to make a choice between E30 or E85, but ensure that the infrastructure is in place to allow the driver to make that ultimate choice. And many of you in this room have worked with the RFA's market development team, led by Robert White, to engage both the petroleum industry as well as state regulatory agencies to accelerate the introduction of blender pumps. Working with the American Coalition for Ethanol, we've launched a Blend Your Own campaign that is promoting blender pumps all across the country. We'll have 5,000 such pumps within the next 2 years. Those efforts and the efforts of others is what will assure the industry's continued growth and success. Now, I'm often accused of being overly optimistic. Editorial pages have suggested that I whistle past the graveyard. I'm unapologetic for my pride in the men and women of this industry whom I'm privileged to represent. And I will never underestimate or sell short the capability of this industry to overcome challenges. For over 2 decades, I've seen all of which this industry is capable. When challenged, it has always answered the call. When doubters questioned our ability to produce 7.5 billion gallons of ethanol a year, we answered with 10.75 billion gallons last year. When antagonists criticized our use of corn, we answered by supplying more than 30 million metric tons of livestock feed, and our partners, the American farmer, stood with us to the tune of 13 billion bushels of corn. When environmental activists dismissed us as a renewable fuel, we reduced energy and water use, all while producing more fuel. And so I whistle away. But there's more work to be done, work that only we can do. First, let's learn a lesson from BP and redouble our efforts toward plant safety and environmental compliance before there's a problem. Second, the exponential growth that we have seen over the past several years would strain any industry's quality control efforts. Let's make sure we're doing everything possible to meet fuel quality and feed quality standards. We can't afford to lose market opportunities because we're not paying attention to detail. Third, we need to recognize that the industry has been fundamentally changed as ethanol has become a ubiquitous component of the U.S. motor fuel market. Ethanol is now a commodity. It's distributed and marketed in a fungible system that presents a host of new challenges, not the least of which is understanding risks that may not have existed before. Those companies most likely to survive in this new world order will be those that have the best risk management tools. Now, we in Washington have work to do as well. Everyone in the room is aware of the internal political dynamics of the industry today. I'm here to tell you that while we have come a long way, ours is an industry far too small to afford mixed messages and petty infighting. Regardless of your trade association or affiliation, we have thrived as an industry because we have always found a way to come together for the greater good. We have been successful because the men and women who make up this industry, who sit in this room, care not a whit who is representing them as long as those people are working tirelessly on their behalf. Tom Bias is a friend of mine, and I respect his contribution and that of Growth Energy to the challenges we face, and we are working together on issues that we can. Brian Jennings is a friend of mine, and I know that we would not have the grassroots support we benefit from today were it not for the effort of the American Coalition for Ethanol. We all need to focus a bit less on who is right and a bit more on what is right. We don't, and we will fail. We do, and we will absolutely succeed once again. Our opponents are well aware of the shift in the political dynamic the Gulf spill has brought. They realize they need to throw everything, including the kitchen sink, at our industry right now if they're going to stop us. We cannot, we will not let that happen. The road before us is fraught with challenges, potholes, and potential detours. The issues we confront cannot be solved with press releases or a speech at an ethanol conference. In order to ensure the long-term viability of this industry and those members of this industry still to come, we must not shy away from hard work. Henry Ford, an early champion of our industry, said, quote, "Coming together is a beginning. Keeping together is progress. Working together is success." Together, using the collective genius of this industry, we can expand markets, we can answer our critics, and we can permanently place ethanol among the nation's foremost energy solutions. Let's get to work. Thank you.